All right, so this is our first session. We are doing the principle of melodic line. A melodic line in a song is the melody of a repeated set of notes. It's the distinct musical phrase that's repeated throughout the piece. So see if you can recognize this. Do 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 do. What is it? It's the Harry Potter theme song. It starts out with bells, mysterious and quiet, and then the orchestra slowly layers in until partway through the piece, the horns are carrying the melodic line, and they're like, boom, 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 boom. The composer uses the melodic line throughout the song and throughout even the movies, changing it and playing with it for effect, sometimes truncating it to represent the villains, but always coming back to it. Now, a full musical piece is more than its melodic line, but the line is powerful enough to remind a person of the entire piece, and in this case, the entire musical, or the entire movie series. So, here's our principle statement. I'm gonna say it, and then we can all write it together. Just as every song has a unique melody, so too, every book of the Bible has a unique message. So let's write that down. Just as every song has a unique melody, so too, every book of the Bible has a unique message. And here's a picture that can help us remember this principle. It's notes on a staff to remind us that we are going to listen for notes and understand how they fit in the message of the book. So as Bible teachers, when we're looking for this unique message of the book, our task is to listen well enough and long enough to hear the unique message of the book. Now, that's easier to do if you're already familiar with the book. Some of you may not have seen the Harry Potter movies, and so you might not have recognized that song. The same thing is true with books. If we're less familiar with a book, we won't hear the message as quickly. We won't be able to recognize that melodic line. We'll need to work longer at it. So our aim with this principle is to listen for the unique message of the book and then write it down in a concise statement. In other words, we're analyzing and then synthesizing. We listen and then we state. Our melodic line will end up as a sentence that's short enough to be memorable and specific enough to the book to be unique. You can't have the same melodic line statement for multiple books. So how do we do this? How do we listen for the melodic line of a book? Let's think about a few strategies for this. We can read the book. We can read the whole book, which in these Old Testament history books can take a long time, but we want to read it. And as we're reading it, we want to circle things. We want to underline things. We want to be taking notes. We want to be really trying to listen for what we're hearing. We might even listen to it out loud. It'll help keep us moving. I did that for 1-2 Samuel leading up to this workshop. Another strategy is repetition. What's repeated in a book? If an author repeats a word or concept a lot throughout the book, it might be important. In fact, let's open up our Bibles and look at a quick example. Go to the very beginning, Genesis 1. And we're going to page through a few pages here of Genesis. So I'll tell you where to rest your eyes, and I want you to listen for the repetition that you hear. So start in chapter 1, verse 22. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas." Look down to verse 28. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it." Look at 2, verse 3. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all the work he had done in creation. Flip forward to 9:1. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Turn forward to chapter 12, starting in verse 2. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So what were you guys hearing repeated? Blessing. Yeah, blessing shows up more than 70 times in the book of Genesis. It's arguably the most repeated significant word. So when we're thinking about repetition, we don't care about the thus, right? Significant word. Blessing seems like an important note. So what if you heard a melodic line statement that sounded like this? God creates and blesses a people to be fruitful, multiply, and bless others. Does that sound like Genesis? Yeah. So that's the sort of statement that we might be looking for as we do this work, and we'll draft something like that, and then we'll do more work, and we'll revise it, and we'll revise it as we do more work. That's repetition. Another strategy that can be helpful to us, especially in long books, is top and tail. Top and tail is reading the opening of a book and the closing of a book. And that can really jumpstart us in these long books. When we look at top and tail, we want to think about two things. We want to think about what's repeated in both the beginning and the end of the book, and what changes. Is there a significant change? Like, draw for a minute on your knowledge of the book of Exodus. In the book of Exodus, where did the people start out? Egypt, and they're in slavery. By the end of the book of Exodus, where are they? They're at Sinai, and they're not any longer slaves. Like, that seems like a pretty significant change. That trajectory for God's people is probably going to make it into your melodic line statement for the book of Exodus. So another strategy is macro structure. The overall structure of the book can help us hear important notes, and it can help us make sure that the notes we're hearing are in all the significant parts of the book. Sometimes I'll get really excited about a note, and then I realize, oh wait, it's only in the first section, and it trails off. So maybe I still need it, but I need to make sure that I'm hearing the contribution of all the major parts of the book. Another strategy is narrator's comments. For this one, let's look at a quick example. Flip to 2 Kings 17. And you know, these strategies, they really layer together. We want to try a lot of them and see how they start to help us to build and then refine our provisional melodic line statement. So you might have, let's say that you're studying through 1 and 2 Kings and you've been working on your melodic line statement and you're thinking about what the kings ought to be doing. So you're like, God's kings lead Israel in faithfulness to God. And you're like, that's great. That's my melodic line statement. And then you get to chapter 17. And you run into a narrator's comment. So we've had kings, 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 and then we find out Israel goes into exile, or they're scattered by Assyria. And then 17, verse 7, the narrator breaks into the action of all these kings, 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 kings to tell us why this is going on. So I'm going to do a similar thing where I'll kind of skip-stone us through this. Look at verse 7. And this occurred because Israel had sinned against their God. Look down to verse 14, but they would not listen, but were stubborn as their fathers had been, who did not believe in the Lord their God. Look down to 16, and they abandoned all the commandments of the Lord their God and made for themselves metal images of two calves, and they made an Asherah and worshipped all the host of heaven and served Baal. And they burned their sons and their daughters as offerings and used divination and omens and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger. Therefore, the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. Wow, so this is a pretty significant narrator's comment to come in and tell us why everything that's been happening in the book has been happening. So that would probably cause us to go back to our rather positive melodic line and revise it, right? Okay, so here's some strategies. Any questions at this point on these strategies or on what melodic line is? Okay? Once we hear these notes and understand how they're arranged on the musical staff, then we're going to work on drafting this melodic line statement. We'll keep refining it. This is something that takes a long time. It's something you do in the weeks and months leading up to your teaching. So, let's craft a melodic line statement for 1-2 Samuel in the next 30 minutes. Yeah, the laugh is the right response. Because I just said it takes months. It does, indeed. We cannot do this well in 30 minutes, so we're going to lean heavily on work done outside this room. We're going to lean heavily on all of you's reading. That was bad English, but you know what I mean. We're going to lean on your reading of 1-2 Samuel outside this room, and we're going to lean on my work in these two books that are two in our English translations, but they were one originally. And so some of you are like, whoa, when I signed up for the workshop, it just said 1 Samuel. I didn't even know I was supposed to read 2 Samuel. Don't worry, I got you. Like, we'll just lean on my work and look at a few things together in 2 Samuel. And even so, even leaning on all of our work outside this room, we'll still just scratch the surface. So my goal is not to land at a fast and tight melodic line statement for this great book. My goal is to help us experiment with applying these strategies to it, okay? All right, so we're gonna start with the one that I said helps us jumpstart. We're gonna start with top and tail. And you guys are going to turn to a partner or two at your tables, and I want you to work together. I want you to actually read these texts at the top and the tail out loud. What that's going to do, it might feel awkward because you'll hear other people reading, but it creates beautiful cacophony and energy in the room that will allow you all to keep talking when you're done reading. Because then you're going to look for what's repeated in the beginning and the end, and what has changed from the beginning and the end. So make a list of words and ideas you see repeated and key changes you see. Write down your verse numbers. I'm going to give you about 4 minutes to work on that, maybe 5, and then we'll report back. So go ahead. Guys, I had one question of clarification that I want to share with you all. You're looking for things that are repeated in the top and the tail both, not things that are repeated within just one, okay? Cool. Great, keep going. Okay. Am I back on? Yeah, let's bring it back together. I know you guys can keep going, but I'm going to trust that some you all saw different things and we'll collectively get them up there. So, what did you guys see repeated in both the top and the tail? Rock. Good. What were your verse numbers for that?
2, 2, and 22, 3, and 47.
Great. Oops. What else? Avenger? Where do you see that? Okay. What verse did you see that in? Okay. 48. Did we also see that in the top? We saw it on only the tail. Okay, right now we're looking for things that we saw in both. What else did we see repeated in both? The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Okay, you know what? I think you're picking up on something important, guys, which is, whoops, well, I'm going to put enemies. Can you tell that that's meant to say enemies? Yeah, we definitely see this victory of the Lord over enemies in both the top and the tail. We saw that in verse 2, and you pointed out adversaries, which is a similar word in 10. Where did we see that in the tail, guys? No. Anything's fair game. We can talk about changes. Great. Great. So that's a significant change. Yeah. There's the celebration of a future king, and now we're celebrating that there is a king in the past. Great. What else did you guys see? Yep. He will guard the feet of his faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off. And I'm going to throw them in there too, because I know they show up at the tail as well, this idea of faithful versus wicked. What else do you guys see? Believe it or not, we can see a lot in this. There's more. Okay. Yeah. That's true. The exalting is there at the top. The exalting is there at the end too, isn't it? Did anyone notice that? We've got this idea of exalting and bringing down together. Yeah, we see it in verse 4. The boughs of the mighty are broken, but the feeble bind on strength. Exalting is explicitly in there in verse 1, and then in the tail it shows up in verses 48 and 49. And this is an interesting one to think about for a minute. So we're looking at the book's poetic frame, and a lot of these themes work themselves out in the rest of the book, in the stories. So think about that with me for a second. Where do we see God exalting the lowly or bringing down the proud in 1-2 Samuel? What characters have that happen? Yeah, Saul and David. Great reversal. Where else?
Samuel and Eli.
Samuel and Eli. Where else? Yeah. Yeah, thank you, because that actually gets us to the true top, right? Where we have a lowly woman exalted. And it can help us think about the true tale. If you flip real quick to the very end of 2 Samuel, you'll see that the book ends on a touch of a downer. David sins in a sin of pride by censusing his army, and God sends judgment. So we begin on a lowly woman exalted and end on a proud king brought down. Kind of surprising, since we don't usually think of David as being that one. What else? Yeah, David and Goliath is another good one. If we want to think about 2 Samuel, we could think about Absalom and David. We could think about the way Mephibosheth is brought up. So lots of examples. This keeps coming up over and over. And we could look at salvation from enemies and see that repeated over and over in the way the stories unfold as well. We could do that with several of these. All right. I think we have most of them up here. So we've heard some notes in the book's poetic frame. We've explored just a little bit about how that works itself out in the stories of the book. There is way more work to do, but if you were just getting started and this is all you had, I want you to think about what your sentence would be. So go to your partner and work for 2 minutes on crafting a melodic line statement. Go. All right. Who got something on paper that they want to be brave and share? Okay, let's lighten that up the requirement. If you didn't get it down, just who wants to share the ideas that were floating around? The Lord exalts his faithful and brings down their enemies. Where did I lose my pen? So I'm hearing bringing down, I'm hearing faithful and exalting and enemies. So yeah. That's sounding like 1-2 Samuel. I'm hearing a lot of the notes we heard. Who else wants to share?
The Lord exalts his lowly, faithful servant David and humbles proud, unrighteous
Saul. Good. You had a lot of those same notes, just tied to specific characters of David and Saul. Who else? All right, no one else wants to share. That's okay. We're going to keep going. All right, so we've got all these themes, all these notes that we're hearing in the top and the tail. We're certainly not done yet, because melodic line is not just what you hear at the beginning and the end. It's what you hear all the way through. So we would want to take each of these and really trace them through the book to find out do they go through the whole book, or are they just at the top and the tail? And that will help us discern more about what the theme is doing, and also whether it actually is important enough to land in our melodic line statement. Because you notice nobody, neither of our groups that shared, was trying to get every single note in. Like, you get them all down, and then you have to kind of be choosy about what's most important. So let's do that with just one theme. Let's look at salvation/deliverance. I want you guys to read through these four verses and ask, what do we learn about salvation in these verses? Go ahead. All right. So what did you guys see? What did you learn about this theme of salvation or deliverance in the book?
It's dependent on God.
Yeah, it's dependent on God. God saves the people. What else? He does it through the hands of his people. Where are you seeing that? Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, so we're seeing there that God raised David up as king to save the people. That was part of the purpose of raising up these kings, was to actually be God's instrument of salvation. Great. What else did you see?
The earth will know that he
saves. Yeah, there's this multiplying out that this is God's salvation is meant to be known. Good. So this is helpful. We're seeing that God saves the people. We know he is king after all. The people might reject him, but that doesn't stop him being king. He saves and he raises up human kings to save. And they don't even have to be strong or have many soldiers for that to work. So go back to your tables, and those of you who weren't quite ready to share last time, get something down on paper using this enhanced understanding of salvation to revise your melodic line statement. Go ahead. All right. I want to hear a few more. What have you guys come up with? I'm looking to this side of the room. I don't think I've heard one from over here. The Lord saves Israel through faithful kings while humbling the proud. Yeah. I'm hearing all sorts of notes in that. Another one?
God raises up a savior from nothing and humbles the proud.
Okay, God raises up a savior from nothing and humbles the proud. Yeah, I think you're leaning into this idea of the king as savior there. Yeah, one more. We simply love and obey, the Lord actually does the deliverance. So that's really leaning hard, yeah, into this idea that it's the Lord who saves. So yeah, this, we've got some provisional things down on paper. I love it, and I see more hands. I'm gonna stop us now with sharing of these, but I love that now everyone has something on paper. So now you have something you can keep revising, because these statements are going to be provisional for quite some time. So we have kind of an idea of what the whole book is about. And you know what? Understanding the melodic line of a book is so much fun and it's so valuable in and of itself. But it's helpful in our teaching more to help us understand specific texts better. Most of us are probably not going to try to teach 1-2 Samuel in one shot, right? I mean, I don't know if you guys do marathon Bible studies, but we don't. We're teaching individual texts. And understanding how your text relates to the melodic line can help you be more faithful in your individual text. It kind of gives you guardrails. You know that your individual text can't teach something that is completely outside the sphere of these notes that you're hearing in the melodic line. So you have to be able to understand, how does my text relate to these notes I'm hearing in the melodic line? So we're going to just practice with that real quick in one text. Imagine that a friend of yours at another church is leading a women's series through 1 Samuel, and she invites you to come as a guest and teach 1 Samuel 5, because it's always a really good idea to give the weird text to guest teachers. And this is a weird one. This is when the Philistines have just taken the Ark of God. And so you're like, all right, I would love to do that, because I'll take and come teach the weird text for you. So you kind of glance through it, and you see that the Philistines have captured the Ark of God in verse 1, and you see, there's this statue of Dagon. And the statue of Dagon gets broken. Ooh, I like this idea. Maybe this is a text against idolatry. We could have a main point that smash the idols in your life. That sounds like a good main point. Let's play with that idea for a minute and go to this text and see if relating this passage to melodic line changes that idea at all. So I want you guys to go, you're gonna read this whole chapter. It's relatively short, but still, read quickly, please. And then ask yourself the question, what notes from our melodic line work are we seeing reflected in this story? Okay? So read quickly, go. Okay, let's bring it back together. What notes from our melodic line work were you seeing reflected in this text? The hand of God was heavy. And how does that relate to one of our notes?
God raises up and humbles.
Yeah. Yeah, God's humbling in this text, isn't he? Who's he humbling? Yeah, the Philistines. We could even say Dagon. There's this bringing down going on. Anything else? Did someone connect to something different? Yeah, this is the opposite of saving. Yeah, and who are the Philistines in the book of 1-2 Samuel? The Philistines are enemies. Like, God can defeat enemies even when he's all by his lonesome. He doesn't need any humans to help him. He's king. He can do it all by himself. So there is tons more to do in this quirky, fun text. But do you see how melodic line already is helping us? It's helped us clarify my first impression. I won't put it on you. But this is not a text about destroying idols. This is a text about God bringing down enemies and that he can do it anywhere, anytime, by himself. He's king. So this really moved us away from an impulse towards moralism. And instead of a talk against idolatry in the women's lives, I now have a talk pointing them to their true king, God himself, who brings down enemies. So idolatry might still have room in an application, but kind of relaxing it into its proper place is truer to this text, truer to the message of 1-2 Samuel, and truer to the gospel that the text points to. So do you guys see how melodic line helps us in individual texts, maybe especially when they're weird? All right, great. Now, we've experimented with this idea of melodic line, but how does this fit in to our work in preparing to teach the Bible? Well, every time we go to teach, we start out with a text, and we want to get to understanding what the text means to us now. And we don't want to just go straight across, because you end up with wonky stuff like my smash the idols. That's blind contextualization. There's a safer way to get to us now than to go straight there. And that is to think first about what the text meant to them then. And along this path, we have principles like melodic line, like structure, which Cindy's gonna help us with in just a few minutes, and that's number one on your worksheet. Tomorrow, we'll look at context, which is number two on your worksheet, and 1 + 2 = 3, which is your author's main point. And all along that leg of the pathway is exegesis, which is a really fancy word that just means studying to understand. So we're studying to understand what it meant to the original audience along this leg. And tomorrow, we'll take the turn and we'll figure out, how does my individual text fit in the grand story of the Bible, in the grand story of redemption that God is working out that points us to the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ? So I've got a little cross and an arrow here to represent the death and resurrection of Jesus. So this is our theological reflection leg. And our gospel connection is number 4 on the worksheet. And finally, after all that work, we're ready to bring the text to us now in a more faithful way. And this final leg is our leg of persuasion. We want to get the text right, and then we want to get it across to our women or our children or our youth or our, I think someone had international students, like, we want those audiences to be persuaded of the truths in these texts. So we're going to think about hard about what's my main point. What applications are there? And arrangement, that's your title and outline. So this is our pathway. We're going to keep working our way through it over the next few days.